welcome to the Beautiful Nightmares and Wicked Dreams podcast, covering the world of publishing and writing with your hosts, Rhiannon Frater and Lori Parker.
Hi, everyone. This is episode 2 of Beautiful Nightmares and Wicked Dreams podcast. Thank you for joining us again. I hope you enjoyed our first episode. We've been getting some pretty positive feedback. I'm your co-host, Rhiannon Frater.
And I'm your other co-host, Lori Parker.
And we are a writer and a fledgling writer slash blogger. So, and we love talking about books and the publishing world. And we're big fangirls of quite a few authors. And we are very lucky that today we will have Timothy Long on the show. And we have Emily Goodwin next week. So you're going to want to definitely check that out. Emily Goodwin, was the inspiration for Contagious Reads, Lori's blog, and heavily lobbied to have this podcast called Contagious Reads Podcast. Is that correct?
Yeah.
We're really excited to talk to her. And Timothy Long is, I've known him for ages and ages, and I'm a fan slash friend slash enemy. We playfully antagonize each other. So, but he's really cool dude, and I think you're gonna love hearing from him later on. And so let's get to the latest news that's going on with us. I'm gonna be at Texas Frightmare Weekend in Dallas, Texas, and that is happening the first weekend in May. And it's going to be at the Hyatt Regency. So I will be signing books at the Permuted Press booth, I believe, on Saturday. They have specific times set up. And Timothy Long is going to be there, too. So you need to check that out. And Lori has something very exciting coming up. Can you tell us about that?
Yes. My book blog, Contagious Reads, is doing a horror con. And I'll talk a little bit more about that next week, what it entails and stuff. But I just wanted to give everybody a heads up that it's happening, and that this week we will be putting out the nominations for you to nominate your favorite female horror authors and their books and their stories for awards during the con. So that's exciting.
That sounds really cool. So if you want to vote, or at least see what the, I think you said something that was like best gore or something category, go check out the categories and vote and kind of see what is going on there, I guess. And that's at contagiousreads.com, Lori's blog post.
Yep.
So we got some pretty cool stuff going on. And I do want to say at Texas Frightmare, George A. Romero is going to be there. So I'm going to be fangirling like crazy. So like, I will be. I can't wait. I think it's going to be really cool. And I'm just excited to be hanging out with a lot of the other Permuted Press authors, because though I'm traditionally published with Tor, I'm also traditionally published with Permuted Press, and then I self-publish. So in past years, I would go as an indie author and have my own booth. And last year, I shared a booth with Jessica Miggs, who writes zombie books for Permuted Press. But this year, Permuted Press decided to put their own booth up and then have the writers do book signings, which I think is really cool, because that means I can go and stalk the actors and actresses and go to panels and kind of hang out and be a geek. So I think it's going to be a lot of fun. So
I want to go.
You have to go next year.
Yes.
And then we can have our podcast stuff there so people can get swag. So, cause we will be around in a year. We've already made up our mind, right?
Yep.
Without a doubt. So, cause we like to talk. Without a doubt, that's one of the things. So thank you again for checking out the second episode, and we will get better over time, I promise, and we're still learning the technical side of everything. And I do want to thank again our wonderful producer Jennifer, who puts up with all the crazy stuff that we do that she has to clean up for us. So big kudos to her.
Yay.
And Lori's laughing because she knows what Jennifer has to put up with. So first up is Burning Up the Book Sphere. It's when we talk about the latest publishing buzz. And I just, again, saw some articles popping up about if 3-star reviews are bad or good. And I think that's kind of interesting because last week I had given The Unseen 3 stars by J.L. Bryan because I felt it was a good book. It didn't blow me away, but I felt it was a really satisfying read. And so I gave it 3 stars. And somebody said to me, well, I'm really sorry you didn't enjoy it. And I was surprised by that. So as a blogger, I'm sure you run into this 3-star conundrum. So why don't you shed some light on kind of what you've gone through with the 3-star thing?
I've been on both sides of the blogging coin. I did blog tours through Parajunkie for a while, and our policy, most blog tour company policies are if you give a book under 3 stars, don't post the review during the tour. So I think that's like people see it as the lower limit of what's acceptable as a good review. And I've also had people I've given something a 3-star before and somebody was like, I'm sorry you didn't like that book. And I'm like, no, I liked it just fine. It's just that it didn't blow me away sort of thing. And I can understand where people would get that because a lot of people just look at the star rating. They don't read the review. They'll look at the average star rating for a book and say, oh, it's only got a 3.5. It must not be good. No, that's a solid book.
Yeah, I think that's kind of where I think we have a difference between Goodreads. And Goodreads is usually the one I kind of go off of. Goodreads is I think it's 3 is I liked it.
Yeah.
Let me see. 1 is... I think didn't care for it. 2 is it was okay. 3 is I liked it. 4 stars is I really liked it. And 5 is I loved it. Isn't that right?
Yeah.
But I think on Amazon, I think people have a different way of looking at the star system. That's what somebody was trying to say to me the other day. They're like, oh no, you don't understand. On Amazon, 3 stars is actually bad.
You would think since Amazon owns Goodreads, they'd match them up.
Right. But there's nothing actually, I don't think there really is a guide on Amazon that says it's bad or good. You know what I mean? I think it just means middle of the road. To me, it's kind of like, I don't know. It's like movies. There's some movies I go see and I see it once and it was entertaining for what it was, but I have no desire to see it again. And then there's other movies that I love and I watch over and over and over and over again. So I guess one of the things I did ask my fans, I said, you know, do you consider 3 stars to be bad? And it said, you know, a lot of people said that they don't pay attention to 5 stars and 1 stars.
Yeah.
They only look at the 4, the 3, and the 2, which is kind of discouraging because I actually have one book that has like 130 reviews almost. And about 95% of them are 5-star reviews. And I'm very proud of that because, you know. But, you know, it's like, you know, people were saying, well, they think that 3-star reviews are actually more helpful because maybe the person's picking out what was wrong with the story. Do you hear that?
Yeah, I've heard people say that the 4-star and 3-star reviews are more honest than a 5-star review, which is ridiculous to me because I give my honest opinion no matter what. But I don't know. I think maybe they think a 5-star review is you're actually reviewing an author that you're either a super fan of or friends with. You know, maybe they think that that's the only people you'll give a 5-star review to.
I saw that actually quite a lot in the discussion. A lot of people saying, well, I think 3 stars are a more honest review. And I was like, but I sometimes will review at 5 stars, like, you know, there's some books that are genuinely amazing that I just, like, years later I'm still thinking about, and I go back and read them over and over again, and I'm like, well, am I hurting an author by giving them 5 stars? Because that makes me feel kind of bad, because, I mean, And I guess maybe it goes back to gaming the system, though, because we have heard about people who have, you know, authors who have fits when they get a 3-star review and get really upset about it. And I don't know if you've encountered that as a blogger or not, but I have heard of cases of that. Have you experienced that?
The only real sort of retaliation I've ever had was I gave a book 2 stars. 2 stars, and a bunch of the author's little minions came in and attacked my review because I was like, I'm not sure what I liked about this book, but obviously I liked it since I finished it, you know, kind of snarkily. And they were just like, I don't understand how you can sleep at night for being so rude. I'm like, I sleep just fine, thanks.
Well, you know, it's kind of funny because, like, I'll be honest, I mean, there's a reviewer who, when we did the Midnight Spell Tour last year, me and Cody Boy, for our YA Supernatural, I was so nervous about her being on the tour because she's, to me, one of the reviewers that's really hard on writers, like very particular and very, you know, to get a good review from her is so, not a good review, I don't want to say that. To get an exalted review, like a 5-star or 4-star, is very rare for her. So I was really worried because I knew that our book was kind of out of the mainstream a little bit. You know, it was a little bit, it was not the traditional YA in any way, shape, or form, because The Midnight Spell has a witch, a 15-year-old witch girl, and her best friend Adam is a 15-year-old gay boy, and they live in a small town of Texas, and it's not a romance between them, it's all about their friendship. So we kind of knew it was different, and Cody and I were absolutely on pins and needles until the morning her review went up, and it was 3.5 stars. We high-fived each other. We were so relieved. I mean, we were like, oh my God, because to us, that was like getting a 5-star from her, basically. And so I think my feeling about 3 stars is that you've satisfied something in the reader. They may not have loved everything that you did, which, you know, that makes sense because life is subjective. But I didn't see it as a negative. And I actually had people who contacted me today going, are you upset? I'm like, hell no, I'm relieved. You know, I felt that I had won the lottery. So, but, yeah. And I mean, there was a lot of stuff that said, you know, one of the things that people said that they'd consider a 3-star review kind of middle of ground, that it was neutral. Some people said that they only looked at the 3-star reviews when thinking about buying a book. Some people said that they thought the star system was completely unfair anyway. And people said that, you know, if they saw where somebody rated a book but didn't leave a review, they would take that as the person didn't care enough about the book. Like, even if you gave it a good rating or a bad rating, but you don't write a review, that they disregard that altogether. So it was really interesting because, you know, some people were like, you know, I'll not read a book that's rated 3 stars. And then, like, if 3.5 on Goodreads or 3.7 on Amazon. But other people said that that wouldn't dissuade them. So I think 3 stars has really become, the 3-star review has become whatever you want it to be.
Yeah, I think, in, you know, I feel so guilty for giving anything under 3 stars, but if I did, and then again, I'm, as a reviewer, I've made a promise to give my honest review to people, you know, so I'm not gonna just say, oh, it's a 3-star even though I hated the book. So
I've had conflicted books, you know, books that I mean, I've read a book one time because I don't remember if it was you, but somebody dared me to read this one particular erotica, and I picked it up, and it was really over the top and really actually kind of hilarious because the particular author had like tried to come up with like every single metaphor for the sexual acts and sexual organs and all this kind of stuff. So it was really over the top. And I read it, and I could say, well, yeah, that was kind of fun. It wasn't what I usually read. And I reviewed it as honestly as I could, and I said, you know, because this isn't my genre, it's a 2.5 for me. But if you're into this, I think it'd be a 4 or a 5.
Yeah.
So
I think I gave, you know, that that exact same book 3.5 stars.
Yeah, and what was interesting, the series, I did read the rest of the series, and this series got a lot darker and better written after that first one. It was like the first book was even part of this, the rest of the series. I thought the second and third book were much better written and much more intense and richer read. And I don't usually read erotica, so it says something about the author that she got me to read the rest of an erotica series. So if you guys would like to chime in on whether 3 stars is good or not, you can always join us on our Facebook page, and we'd love to hear from you. And it's always fun hearing from readership, because the readers sometimes tell us stuff we don't even know. I mean, I had no idea that people sometimes completely disregard 5-star reviews. I mean, that was kind of a shock.
I can see that, though, because a lot of promotional stuff will go out and it'll be like an author, I have 75 5-star reviews in the first 5 days of release. And I'm like, cool, good for you.
Yeah.
You know?
I don't usually know what my ratings are or my rankings until somebody tells me. And then I'll go look. Because I'm not paying attention.
Yeah. And there are people out there that don't trust those 5-star reviews that come out the first week of review. Because it's usually street team members and fans and stuff that get the ARCs, according to them. So it's a weird... Reviewing is a weird sort of thing. People don't trust bloggers on Amazon because they get the books for free.
Right. And ARC, by the way, is an advanced review copy. Those are sent out by indie authors and small publishers and the big publishers to reviewers, and sometimes to the Amazon Vine reviewers, to get early buzz in early reviews. And it's a common practice. So I think that also creates, sometimes people get really kind of huffy going, well, how does this already have a review and the book's not out? I can't buy it. It's kind of, reviews are kind of a weird thing, but the 3-star thing was really fascinating to me, because I've seen writers have complete meltdowns over getting 3 stars where I'm like, really?
You're like, high five, I did good.
Like, yay, you know, so, yeah, I'm kind of like, I'm sitting here, and I'm not tooting my own horn. I'm actually sitting here kind of worried, because a lot of my books have 5-star reviews. Like,
yeah.
Those are legitimate. My family doesn't even review my books. I have never had a family member not once review my books. So, and most of my friends really don't, unless they're a blogger.
Yeah.
And then there, I mean, and some of my blogger friends give me 3-4 stars. So, I mean, it's not like, you know, and as I always tell you, one day I will write something that you do not like.
Yeah. And I get the beta copies, and you're not technically supposed to review the beta copies.
Yeah.
So, you know, I can't actually review it until I read the final copy, which might be months, because I've already read it. So I have to move on to the next book, you know? So,
yeah.
It's just, reviewing is just this whole crazy world, you guys. You don't even.
Yeah, writing is a crazy world.
The whole entire world is crazy.
writing and reviewing and everything and all that stuff. And we are going to talk more about reviews, because reviews are just like, seriously, the review thing in publishing, in the blog sphere, in the book sphere, is people that are regular readers have no idea.
No.
How intense the discussion about reviews can be. So we're going to be talking about reviews probably in an upcoming podcast, a little bit more about to explain why reviews are important, actually, and how writers should react to them. And as a reader, what you should be putting in your reviews, because a lot of times I think readers don't really know what they should or shouldn't say in a review. So we'll talk about, we'll address some of those different things in upcoming podcasts. So interesting thing to think about, though. 5 stars being ditched out the window and people looking at that 3-star. It's very interesting. So going on to our recommendations, because Lori and I believe that you can get your creative juices flowing from different parts of your life, especially if they're creative endeavors, like watching television or a film or reading a book or reading a comic book or even making something. It can kind of get that whole writer flow going. I know listening to music can oftentimes get me into the writing mood. Does it get you into the writing mood?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and I have soundtracks for my books. Do you have a soundtrack for yours?
I have soundtracks for not only the book as I'm writing, and maybe even just a scene. I'll have a CD that I'll listen to during the scene, or, you know, like, album. Oh, and even reading, like, I'll listen to an album on repeat while I'm reading, and then when I hear that song again, a scene from the book will, like, pop up into my head. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah, I was just listening to Nine Inch Nails because I was making a grocery run, and I was sitting in the car, and I was having these images coming into my head for a book I can't talk about right now, but I was just sitting there going, this is going to be my soundtrack for this book. So, but my recommend this week is not music related. It's actually a film called Stoker. Have you seen it, Lori?
No.
It's... Stoker is a movie that I got into a screening for, and I was in it. I knew it was rated R, and I knew it was loosely based on an Alfred Hitchcock film. And I was surprised at how many kids were in this movie. It was horrible. I mean, because, you know, free movie, people are like, yeah, let's take the kids. And it was R-rated movie. It's really creepy movie. It's a horror movie, but it's kind of like a suspense thriller horror in the vein of Alfred Hitchcock. And it's really beautiful to watch. Some of the imagery is just amazing. In fact, I told a friend of mine, I said, it was one of the few movies that I thought this story had to be a film because there's no way you could describe the imagery in a book and have it be that effective. It really is a beautiful film. And it's about, it's a young girl. She's a teenager and there's something off about her. And her father dies tragically. And at the funeral, she sees a mysterious man, and then she discovers at the wake it's her uncle. And her uncle supposedly has been traveling all the way around the world. But it soon becomes very apparent that there's something quite not right with the uncle as well. And Nicole Kidman is in it, and she's brilliant. She plays the alcoholic mother who can't understand why her daughter doesn't love her. And it's just pieces of this movie that are just so disturbing. I remember sitting in the theater during this one scene thinking, there are children in this theater watching this right now. And there's some gruesome parts and some, there's nudity and there's some very sexually disturbing things. So, I mean, this is definitely an adult film, definitely intriguing. It's a slow moving film. The payoff really comes toward the end of the film, and I'll tell you this much, you'll never look at snow angels the same way again. So you gotta watch it.
Okay. My recommend this week is The Conjuring, which is probably the last movie I've watched in a long time. I say this over and over again, I don't watch a lot of TV. It's dominated mostly by cartoons.
Because you have a 3-year-old tyrant. Yeah.
So, yes. She's my victim. my victims aren't screaming today.
Yeah.
The Conjuring is a true story based on this couple that they don't do exorcisms, but they go and help people solve their paranormal problems.
Warrens.
Yeah, the Warrens. I couldn't remember their name. Thank you. And they come into this house, and the house is just got all sorts of crazy stuff happening, and it just gets worse when the Warrens show up, and it's like one of the creepiest films I have ever seen in my life, and it scared me, and that's hard to do because I've been watching scary movies since I was a small child, so not much phases me, and my mom and I are both watching it because my mom's a Stephen King like fanatic, so whenever I came out during Stephen King's heyday when he had all those miniseries on TV, It and stuff, so I would watch those as a young child and be like, cool. And then my mom and I are watching this, and we're, like, gripping each other, like, every time something happened. And visually, it's just creepy all around. And I love it. It's just got that creepy vibe about it.
I saw it, too. And I have to say, the part that got to me was the hand clapping.
Yep.
Yeah, to me, that was the scariest part of the movie. Even, like, the big Hollywood ending. Because, you know, Hollywood always has to have the big dramatic ending.
Yeah.
You know, the ending wasn't so scary to me, but it was a lot of the stuff before the big dramatic Hollywood ending that really was scary. And that doll.
Yeah. Annabelle.
Annabelle. That doll. And what's worse, I have a doll named Annabelle. It's a little vampire baby doll that somebody made. And
my stepmom used to have a case of those porcelain dolls like that. and she had them displayed in their house, and I'd like go down to the bathroom in the middle of the night, and I'd, you know, I wouldn't have to walk past it, but sometimes I would, you know, go finish sleeping on the couch for some reason, and the dolls would be like staring at me, and I'm like, I don't like, oh man, I just gave it away, now I'm gonna get doll pictures on my Facebook. I post scary pictures of clowns because I have a lot of friends that are afraid of clowns.
No, now... you did it to me. So, you know, it's fair play, creepy dolls, because I hate clowns. Clowns, ugh.
So
clowns are terrifying.
Nobody listened to this podcast. None of my friends.
Oh, my God. So, yes. So, speaking of creepy things, it's now time to interview Mr. Timothy Long. So get excited and get revved up because we're about to start talking to him. And again, I want to remind you, Texas Frightmare is coming up. You can come and get autographs from both me and Timothy Long. And check out our books and meet the rest of the permuted authors while we're there. So everyone, I'm so excited to introduce our next guest. He's the official first guest of our podcast. His name is Timothy Long, and I have known him for quite a long time. We met on the Library of the Living Dead podcast forum years ago. It's not around anymore, but we ended up forming a friendship, and I've had the chance to see his career just grow, and it's been very exciting. And so let me tell you a little bit about Tim. Tim has been writing tales and stories since he could hold a crayon and has read enough books to choke a landfill. Tim has a fascination with all things zombie, a predilection for weird literature, and a deep-seated need to jot words on paper and thrust them at people. Tim resides outside of Seattle, where he lives with his wife, two children, three dogs of various sizes and dispositions, and a near-constant supply of overpriced and overcooked coffee beans. So welcome to the podcast, Tim.
Hey, thanks. It's great to be here.
I'm so happy that you agreed to be on, even though I get to see you this coming weekend at Texas Frightmare, because your career has just been amazing to me. Would you like to tell us a little bit about how you got started writing?
Well, I've wanted to write since I was really young, but I just never had time. I actually didn't get started until I was 40, and that was 5 years ago.
That's when we met, if I recall.
Yeah, and I was a student at the Gotham Writers Workshop for about a year, I started sending stories out left and right, and the Library of the Living Dead started buying them. And that's when the owner said, "Hey, are you working on a book?" And I lied and said, "Of course I am." And I wrote my first book in about 6 weeks. And it was I was surprised that it took off so fast, and it was a little bit of a hit.
And which book was that?
Among the Living.
And Among the Living is now with Permuted Press. Is
Permuted
that correct?
Press, yep.
And you've written a sequel?
There's a sequel called Among the Dead, and then a very late third book called Among the Ashes, but it's almost done.
Cool.
Also published my other book, Beyond the Barriers.
Right. Lori had a question about Among the Living, because we were discussing one of the characters.
I know who.
Your character, Kate, she's a serial killer, and I was just wondering why you decided to make her that. That's just so interesting. That's different. I don't think I know of a lot of people that write about serial killers.
It was sort of inspired by watching a lot of Dexter, and also I didn't want to have normal Joe average characters in the book at all. No, I didn't want anyone to be a superhero. I didn't want anyone to be to have all the answers. And so I put a serial killer, a drug dealer, and a journalist who's recovering from the death of his young son.
I loved Lester, right?
Lester, yeah.
He was hilarious.
Yeah.
And it was so funny because that book is actually, it's got some really great scary zombie sets. I mean, there's that one scene where Kate goes, I mean, Kate's kind of like Michonne in that she fights with a katana, but she one-ups Michonne because she fights with two, right?
Yeah, she carries the katana and the shorter sword, the wakizashi.
And there's this one scene where she's just mowing down zombies. And I thought that was a great scene. But there's also a lot of humor in you, what you write, because you're kind of a naturally funny guy.
I think so. I tend to, no matter what I'm writing, I tend to let some humor creep in.
I think it's kind of normal. I mean, Lori and I were talking about how much we joke around and laugh and how it seems weird when we read a book and there's like no humor in it at all.
Yeah, well, I think that people are really starting to respond, especially my recent series, the Z-Risen books. I've put a lot of humor and I've put a lot of military humor in there, especially because I was in the military. And I read over and over again, it's like, wow, we love the action and the characters and the dialogue and the humor. So if something works, I'm not going to quit doing it.
So Laurie and I have a love of strong female protagonists, and Z Risen also has a strong female protagonist. Can you tell us a little bit about her?
It does. Anna is has become probably my favorite character in the series, and she tries really hard to be this hard-ass girl who takes no crap, but, you know, she's a person, just like anyone else, and she's just as likely to pop off a one-liner with the guys or shoot a zombie between the eyes or, you know, maybe fall for one of the characters. You never know. But she does have a little bit of a setup, because she does something that really irritates the other two main characters, and it kind of carries over through the books. So there's a big development in the first book that that sets that up.
But you're gonna write how many books in the Z Risen series?
Until I can't type anymore. I don't know.
you're not gonna have a definitive number, huh?
I know the third book is gonna wrap up this huge arc. I'm really seriously thinking ahead, and the fun thing about the Z Risen books is they're set in the same world as my Beyond the Barriers books. So I'm planning to have the characters and time zones all match up eventually.
But they don't hook up with Among the Living and Among the Dead. That's
no,
separate.
That's a totally different series.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay. So you wrote an urban fantasy called At the Behest of the Dead. Is that correct?
I did. Yeah.
Okay. So how did you get that idea?
I had this idea to do a modern day necromancer, and he's kind of a smartass. Gets into a lot of trouble. He gets his butt kicked quite a bit. And
sounds familiar somehow. I don't know why.
Because I live in Seattle, where we seem to be serial killer central. there's actually a joke in the book where he's talking to one of the cops. He's like, normal day in the city. Look at your neighbor over there. He's probably got 10 bodies under the patio. But he helps the cops investigate a serial killer in downtown Seattle. And it turns out that it's not really a person at all.
That's very cool. I mean, I think one of the things I like about your writing is that you have a tendency to take something that everybody thinks they are well acquainted with, like a certain genre, and then you just kind of twist it with that little Timothy Long wickedness that you're very good at. Like, for example, The Zombie Wilson Diaries, which I gotta admit, this is kind of still my favorite book by you, because it's so freaking wrong.
It is. It's beyond wrong.
Lori was telling me about someone trying to read it, right? Lori, what was it that you said?
I have a friend that tried to read it, and she's like, it's really funny, but I just couldn't handle all the boobs.
That's perfect.
So I was like, so it sounds like a perfect book for me.
Zombie Wilson Diaries is a play on Wilson from, what was the movie with Tom Hanks? What was the name of
it? Yeah, Castaway.
Right. And so instead of having a volleyball, this guy ends up with a female zombie on the island with him, and it's his only companion, and it's really wrong.
It is. It's almost a one-sided romance.
God, I just remember that just by the time she ends up decked out in a coconut bra and a hula skirt, I was just like, I was literally like laughing so hard. My husband's like, what's wrong with you? And I'm like, oh, it's this book. It's just hilarious. So,
but you know, the character is horrified by what he does throughout the whole book.
He's a complex character in that he's such a wanker, but at the same
such an idiot.
Yes, he's so dumb. But it's one of the funniest books I've ever read.
Every chapter starts with, I should kill her today. I don't want to talk to you.
It's true. So you guys got to read this book. If you love zombies, you have to read this book. Trust me, there's some gory stuff in there, but it's also really, really funny. It's just wrong. I was like, don't let your family read this book, Tim. They'll never trust you again.
And you know, it answers the question of what happens to meat when the zombies eat it.
Oh God. Okay, you would have to. That is actually my favorite. I don't want to talk about it, but I mean, you guys have to read this book and find out what this guy does when. Yeah, it's wrong. It's wrong. It just, you have to read it. But you've really gone from being in a small press to Permuted, which is one of the bigger independent presses. And you also self-publish, and you've really had a lot of success lately. And I know Lori had some questions for you about promotion.
Yeah, you said in your bio that you wanted to talk about online branding and marketing, and I think there's a lot of newer authors don't necessarily know what that is. So maybe since you're more established, you could maybe tell us what it is and what it is to you.
Well, it's not an easy subject to cover. Getting your name out there and building a brand is very time consuming, and it normally doesn't happen overnight. And I think there's a lot of misinformation out there because a lot of writers see the outliers, you know, the people like Hugh Howey that are making, you know, $50,000-$60,000 a month, and they think, well, how hard could it be to write a book? What they don't take into account is that for every Hugh Howey, you know, there's 1,000 writers out there that are barely selling 10 or 15 copies a month. And so to make it big, I think the key is to be yourself, first of all, online, and especially Facebook and Twitter and whatever I'm on. I just sort of treat it as everyone there is my friend. And and even last month, I remember I posted one day, I haven't promoted my books in a long time, so go buy my books. Someone wrote underneath it, do you feel better now?
It was like bursting out of you.
Yeah. And the other thing is being consistent. And when I say that, I mean, I've seen some writers that will publish a book and it doesn't sell and they give up. Mm-hmm. But as soon as they publish their book, they should be planning and working on their next book.
Lori and I talked about that a little bit, that writers tend to jump from genre to genre according to what seems to be selling. So there was a lot of people who were writing like paranormal novels or a series. They had like 2 books out in the trilogy, and also new adult hit big. So they abandoned that trilogy and jumped to new adult and left that other series completely dead in the water, you know, which is pretty much abandoning your
early fan base. I know when we did blog tours, we would get debut authors and they wouldn't even have a Twitter set up.
Yeah.
And they're like, make my book sell through the blog tour. And it's like, you can't do that. We're not miracle workers. You know, when you come in, you have to at least have a Twitter set up, you know?
Mm-hmm. So you keep up with all the social media though, right?
I used to try to. I've built up a pretty big fan page on Facebook and Twitter, but I don't update as much as I used to. I just find that I don't know what it is. Lately, I've just sort of concentrated more on writing and getting books out there because I also work a full-time job. If I had all day, you know, to be a full-time writer, I'm sure I'd have a lot more time to promote online.
You'll be there. I really think you will. I mean, really, Z-Risen has taken off. I mean, really, it's huge.
It has, and I was showing my wife today, you know, the new sales board on Amazon. You can see how much you've made for the month. Mm-hmm. And I showed her and I said, can I quit my job now? She was like, crazy?
That's vacation money. What are you talking about?
Exactly.
That's remodeling the kitchen.
Exactly. But yeah, so with the Z-Risen books, what I tried to do, I had a book that was never a big seller called Beyond the Barriers. And it's been with Permuted Press for a couple of years. Mm-hmm. And I've always wondered why I couldn't get it to sell. Was it the cover? Was it the description? I've tried a new synopsis. I've pitched new covers. And finally, I decided to write a web series. And I release weekly chapters. And I set it in the Beyond the Barriers world. Mm-hmm. And at the end of each chapter, I posted a link to the book and said, if you enjoy this, check out Beyond the Barriers. Mm-hmm. And I saw a little bit of bump in sales. But when I put out the first Z-Risen book, I had no idea. I was hoping to sell, you know, maybe 1,000 copies in a few months. I had no idea how big it was going to be. And I included a sample from the Permuted mm-hmm. Press book, Beyond the Barriers. And I said, if you enjoy this book, check this book out. And sure enough, for 3 months in a row, that was a top seller at Permuted Press. A book that had never really sold.
But it shows how you can cross promote other books that you have, that maybe one is the big seller. You can also show people what other books you have and maybe pull those up. So you're a hybrid writer like me, where you're both traditionally published and self-published. Are you going to continue being a hybrid? Or, I mean, what do you see in your forecast?
I plan to. I've got a couple of books I'm working on for Permuted right now. One is not a zombie book and the other one is a zombie book. So I'm looking forward to seeing how those do. But after those are done and I write another Z-Risen book, I'm really not sure what I'm going to work on next. Probably I really need to do a sequel to my urban fantasy because it's been a pretty decent seller.
It's also been very well reviewed. I mean,
it has. And that was the best part, is I didn't know if I would be able to convince people to check out an urban fantasy by me.
I remember when it first came out, it did pretty well. If I remember, people were picking it up. I remember I bought it right away too. So, I mean, I think one of the things that's exciting about you though is that it's been fun watching you build your career. And I guess, you know, because this podcast is about helping starting writers. I mean, what would you about your writing? I want to talk about your writing process. Lori's a starting writer. So what advice do you have to people who are just starting off?
A couple of things. One, if you haven't taken some kind of a creative writing class, consider it. Because not everyone's a natural born writer, or maybe you are a natural born writer, but there are a lot of little rules that are easy to overlook. And just taking even an online class will really point those out. But beyond that, I think it's important to have a set time each day where you write. And you stick to that time no matter what. And, you know, everyone's busy. It's hard to schedule times to write. But I find that if I've got an hour every single day, and I know I've got that hour every single day to write, or 2 hours, because I usually try to write once in the morning and once in the evening, I stick to those times and I don't get the dreaded writer's block because I've disciplined myself to write at those times. It's hard when you have children, especially. And that's one of the reasons it took me so long to get back to writing, was raising two youngins. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's like I could mess around on Facebook for like an hour, and then I'm like, oh, she's being quiet, I'm going to go write. And then she's like, boom, mommy, I want some chocolate milk. And I'm like, dude, you couldn't ask that 20 minutes ago when I hadn't worked myself up to that point in my day.
Life can get in the way of writing, and that is true. Even when you're a full-time writer, I mean, you can be like dealing with conference calls and things like that all day. Okay, so let's say that there's people listening to the podcast who have never read any of your books. What books should they read first?
That is a good question, because I've covered so many different genres. I it's tough to pick. I'd say either the urban fantasy, just because it's very approachable.
And the name of it is At the Behest of the Dead.
Uh-huh. And there's some humor. It's written in first person. There are a few zombies, but I just make fun of the whole zombie genre with them. Otherwise, the first book, Z-Risen Outbreak, is a good one to check out. It's fairly short. You can read it in 5 or 6 hours. And it's pretty much nonstop action humor and zombies. Mm-hmm. And a little twist on zombies that I threw in, because I don't like sticking to the... I mean, don't get me wrong. I love the Romero-style zombies, and I have plenty of those.
It's fun to kind of shake it up a little.
Yeah.
I remember when I wrote Last Bastion of the Living, I was so excited because it was completely different zombies from As the World Dies. So I was like, yes, there's different. Ah! I was all excited. I was like, yay. So we're about to wrap up your interview, and I really want to thank you for coming on. And you are going to be at Texas Frightmare Weekend in Dallas.
Yes.
At the Hyatt.
And you know, another recommendation for new writers is, as soon as they have their first book out, go to a convention, get a booth, even if it's a little table in an artist alley, mm-hmm. put your books out and introduce yourself to everyone that makes eye contact with you. Hand them a business card.
I did that, and it helped a lot.
It does. It helps spread it's word of mouth.
I still have people coming up to me years later who remember buying my first self-published book, and they want to know what I have out now. I mean, so it's really cool. What else do you have coming up? Do you have another book coming out, or are you promoting the Z-Risen? Just had one come out, didn't you?
Yeah, Z-Risen 2 just came out last month, but Jonathan Moon and I are finishing a book for Permuted Press called The Boom Generation. That's going to be coming out later this year.
Okay, is that one of your Bizarro books?
No. This is a very... different book for both of us.
Oh, really? Because you guys did write, tell us the name. I won't even say the title because I don't want to go to hell. Tell us.
We wrote a bizarro novel called The Apocalypse and Satan's Glory Hole.
Tim.
Which is a very funny book.
He keeps trying to get me to read it. And I'm like, dude, I do not want to go to hell.
Let's just say the devil gets his due in that book.
But you are a very funny guy. So I don't doubt it's not hilarious.
Well, the thing with The Boom Generation that John and I are writing is we're both funny guys and we like writing humor, but this is not a funny book.
So you've taken a dark turn.
It's very dark. It's very scary. Imagine you're walking down the street and someone literally explodes and their bones turn into shrapnel and it kills everyone around them.
Lori, you and I, we're so there, aren't we?
Yeah, I have a contact and through Permuted that I get my review copies from, and I'll have to get one.
That's the gist of the book, is it's something that's sweeping the world.
That's really disgusting, Tim. And
it is.
I applaud you.
It is. But what we're going for is really things like families not being able to stay in the same room together. How would you deal with that?
Well, that's true.
People not being able to congregate. But it's got our, it's got the Jonathan Moon and Timothy W. Long twist to it. So,
of course, which is always devious and strange and bizarre.
It's going to be fun.
So,
but, and really gory.
Yeah, obviously, if people are exploding, that would be actually kind of funny, a few people that I know exploding. But I'm not going to go into details on that.
That was actually the first book that I ever pitched to a publisher, and they purchased it without, with just based on the synopsis.
Wow.
That was a good feeling.
Yeah. Every once in a while, like whenever I work on synopsises for pitches and stuff, it's so nerve-wracking because you're like,
it is.
You're like, well, they're going to like it or they're not going to like it. And I actually did have one book get rejected that ended up being my biggest indie seller of all time. So, I mean,
was that Last Bastion?
Yeah, it was Last Bastion. Yeah. It I mean, there was a year, there was 2 months last year where it brought in like half of what I used to earn at my day job, like in 2 months. It was like
that
ridiculous.
Is so awesome.
Yeah, it was ridiculous. I was like, I can pay my taxes. You know?
Those damn taxes.
But I mean, it's really, it's interesting because it's like, you know, you and I write in the horror genre and it can be competitive at times, but there's really a good core people out there. I mean, there's like really cool writers that are in the genre that really are supportive. And I've really have always felt that you're very supportive of other writers and you're always open with giving advice and stuff. And that's really, I mean, if you're not following Tim now on Facebook, you need to start because he's one of the better people in the business.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of great writers out there. And that's another good suggestion for new writers is to get to know the other writers in your genre. You'll find that for the most part, the majority of them are really very approachable. They're nice and they're willing to help out.
They may not be able to help do things for you. That's one of the things I do want to say. Don't expect another writer to be able to do everything for you. I've had people send me emails who are like, could you please read my manuscript and fix everything that's wrong and then give it to your agent? You can't do that. I mean, that's the wrong approach. But just, you know, join their Facebook page. And
but you
see
can
their,
be there
their,
to offer
yeah,
advice.
You can see their journey. Don't be surprised if you approach me, though, if I give you links to my FAQ on my website. Because I always get the same questions over and over again. I don't know if you do, but I always get the same questions. So I actually wrote an FAQ. How sad.
That's a good
is
idea.
Well, it's because I get the same exact questions. So before we let you go, I do want to thank you again for coming on, but tell people about the giveaway that you're offering because I think it's really cool.
Oh, I'm going to give away 3 books, and the winners will have a choice of either, I'll list out a couple of books, but they'll have their choice of either an audio book from that they'll be able to download from audible.com or an ebook gift code.
And if you haven't listened to an audiobook, I highly recommend it for like if you're working out or you're in the house cleaning or, you know, out doing yard work. It's really a great way to make things go quickly. I mean, listening to a book is awesome.
It is, or for a long drive.
When I used to travel a lot for my day job, I used to listen to audiobooks and it really always helped. And where can people find you on the web?
Swing by my website. It's my full name. So timothywlong.com. And yes, I'll update my website soon. And the other great place to go is z-risen.com. And I post all the Z-Risen stuff out there. And there's things like some free wallpaper and, you know, covers and samples.
And I do want to ask you one question about the covers of Z-Risen. They're absolutely beautiful. Who does it? That's beautiful.
The first book was the artwork was done by Straight Eight Studios. They take photographs of military things and they manipulate the photos. So they did the first book cover. Unfortunately, they were really they were doing a bunch of magazine stuff and couldn't work on the second cover. So I contacted Joe Martin at Nine Worlds, and he not only did an amazing cover for book 2, Z-Risen Outcast, he also updated the first book cover, which I had done by loading up Photoshop and watching a couple of tutorials on YouTube. I don't recommend doing a book cover like that. He was very reasonable. It was great working with him. He also did my At the Behest of the Dead cover.
And what was his website?
It's nineworldsmedia, I believe, .com.
We'll have it on the podcast blog page so you can go check it out.
And he did his company, Ragnarok. He's in a partnership with Tim Markwitz, and they put out the recent, the Kaiju Rising book.
Oh, yeah. That was a
which
great
is an
cover.
Anthology. And I was really honored to be asked to participate in that.
I do think that your covers, though, for Z-Risen is a huge reason why people start picking it up, because they are some of the most awesome covers I've seen.
It is, and that's, you know, in the last 2 years, right? I mean, isn't that one of the keys to having a successful book, is a cover that someone's going to look at for more than half a second
and take the chance to read maybe a little excerpt on the inside, exactly. And realize that yes, you can actually write a really good book, which is amazing. Well, thank you for being on the podcast. We hope to have you back again when your next book comes out. Maybe you and Jonathan Moon can come on. And thank you so much, Tim. And like I said, Tim and I are going to be at Texas Frightmare Weekend, the first weekend in May. Please come by, check us out, get a book, get an autograph. Say hello if you're in the area. It's at the Hyatt Regency in DFW in Dallas, Texas. And thank you again, Tim, for being on
the show. It's going to be a great convention. I've been looking forward to this convention since the one ended last year. It was really, really an amazing convention.
It is. It's the best. And Lori will be there next year.
Sweet.
Lori will be there next year, right, Lori?
Right.
One way or the other.
With your book, shaking hands and meeting people. That's great. Well, thanks a lot for having me on. This is a lot of fun.
Thank you, and on to the next part of the podcast. So anyways, it was so great talking to Timothy Long. He is just one of my favorite people and one of my favorite writers, and you need to check out all his books, and, you know, just take a chance with some of the insanity that's in the Zombie Wilson Diaries. And I know he writes his more serious stuff, but serious Zombie Wilson Diaries is really funny. So we're on to our book review this week, and we have chosen, Lori, what have we chosen?
Daughters of the Dead by Corina Hale.
Yes! And we're Corina Hale fans. We're both addicted to the Experiment of Terror series, which is coming to an end soon, and I'm still in denial. Don't remind me that that's happening. But
I'm wearing my Experiment in Terror t-shirt right now.
Oh, awesome. We're such huge fans. I think we started reading the Experiment of Terror books just about the same time, didn't we?
Yeah.
And then we were both blowing through them about the same pace.
When we read them, there were only six out, and I read the first six plus all the novellas in 3 days, I think.
Yeah, I did too. You were ahead of me, and because I was writing, of course, and you were ahead of me, and you were like, you would wait, and you were like, are you done reading this one yet? No. So, not yet. I'm almost there. So, yeah, we're very excited, and I'm starting to get that, like, I don't know, that queasy feeling of it can't be over. So, it's... Oh my God. So anyways, Daughters of the Dead was a departure for her contemporary stuff that she's written, or her new adult stuff she's written. Experiment of Terror is horror, but it does have a strong romantic relationship at the core of it. But Daughters of the Dead was a complete departure for her because she went hardcore zombie. And it's creepy. It is really creepy. And yes, Daughters of the Dead is talking about the famous or infamous Donner Party.
Yeah, so it's historical, it's zombies, and it's romance.
It's weird, though, because I felt like when I was reading it, because, you know, everyone's like, oh, it's a zombie romance. I'm like, what does that even mean? But what it really came out to be was just a really good zombie book with a really creative kind of zombie, I want to add. And based loosely on Native American lore. And it's these two characters at the center of it all that find each other. And yes. I didn't feel like the romance overwhelmed the story, really.
Yeah. I think it was perfectly done.
I felt it was balanced. I mean, there is this one scene where a lot of people might... I think I even wrote in my review, well, there's one really sexy scene.
Yeah.
And I could see where people might go, oh, why would they be doing sexy time when they're being hunted by zombies? But I think, you know, who are we to judge what you do when you think you may be facing death? I mean, you may want to take that one last roll in the
hay. Yeah. You know, and I think there was a lot of, I remember when she put the blurb up when she first announced it to her street team, and her conundrum was, do I even put that there's romance in this novel? And, you know, a lot of people were like, I was like, yeah, you know, because you want to inform the reader as much as possible about what they're going into, because otherwise you're going to be like, I had no idea that they were going to have sex in this book.
Yeah. I was, you know, they were so, like, as always, she does horror very well. And these zombies, they're not traditional zombies. They're scary. They were really scary to me, and they were really gross. And there were some really disturbing scenes in the book. And I did notice that there was some complaints about some of the cultural stuff.
Yeah.
You know, because the lead female character is half Native American, and there are very racist and sexist things that are said to her. But it takes place in the 1800s, and this is pretty much true to that time period.
Yeah. I have 2 degrees from the University of Iowa, and one of them is Native American Studies. So I knew how the white characters would view Eve going into it. So I was sort of surprised by the backlash of people being like, Jake was racist. Well, a good portion of the United States at that point in time was racist against Native Americans because we wanted their land. You know, I didn't even think about that until I started reading other reviews and people were like, he was so racist. And I was like, whoa.
See, that's the thing, kind of like the whole controversy about Mark Twain when they were talking about taking the N-word out of Huckleberry Finn. And there is a big controversy about that. I was of the mindset, and it did eventually end up going this way, that it was written in a time period where that kind of language was normal, and Huck Finn is a product of his time period. And the one thing that was beautiful about Huckleberry Finn is over the course of the book, he realizes that Jim is more than just a slave. He's more than just, because he kind of regarded him kind of like as an animal, and he comes to see him as a human being. And I thought that was very powerful. And I think when you take away the language of the time period to kind of apply modern sensibilities, you're losing something in the mix. Because, I mean, we can't erase the fact that there's huge swaths of our history that are mired, you know, in bigotry, sadly, against gender, against rich, poor, whatever.
Yeah.
And races and ethnic groups.
I think she was definitely very true to the time period with this. And Jake, the main male character, the love interest, you know, he is incredibly racist, but he grows as a character. And not a lot of people would have done that in that time period. So, I mean, kudos to that fictional character.
Well, no. I think the thing I liked about Jake is that he identified the quality of the person that she was, and it ate through his racism and his sexism, and he started becoming a better person because he recognized the fallacy of his belief system, which again is going back kind of like to the Huckleberry Finn and Jim situation.
Yeah.
And, you know, I thought that I did not feel the romance was misplaced in this. I mean, because I just thought it kind of worked. But I do want to say the romance is a minor aspect.
Yes,
it's of the overall book. The most of it is just very tense, scary, frightening. You know, just imagine being in the mountains and being hunted by flesh-eating creatures. I mean, it was really intense. I really liked it a lot, and I was worried about the horses through the whole thing. I'm not gonna lie.
Yeah. And Karina has such a very interesting fan base, because she has her horror fans that only read The Experiment in Terror. And then she's got her contempt fans who only read her romances. And I think people are missing out on the Karina Hale package when you exclude one or the other. She is definitely a very, very talented writer.
I think she's a great writer. I did try reading her most popular Sins and Needle book, and again, this goes back to why sometimes everything is subjective. I couldn't read it because it's about grifters. And when I was a kid, a dear friend of mine who was kind of like, when my mother was very ill, she was kind of our nanny for a short period of time, and I was very close to her. She was taken advantage by a grifter. So I was incapable of having sympathy toward the character in the book because my life had been affected by a grifter. So it's kind of like, it's that kind of thing where I know people love the, what is it called? Sins and Needles is called something. It's a, the artist trilogy.
Yeah, the artist trilogy.
I mean, there are people who just love it, live and die. And I wish I could read it for that reason. So, but I do agree with you. Karina Hale, I even told her because she messaged me and she said, I'm sorry, you didn't, you know, you couldn't get into it. And I'm like, it's not anything to do with your writing. Your writing is so brilliant. It makes me want to go read the rest of your work. So she's a great writer, you guys. I mean, you need to check her out. She wrote the Experiment in Terror series. It's really a lot of fun. I think the second one, the second book in the series was my favorite. I can't remember. Or the
Red
third
Fox.
One. No, the third no. one.
Red was Morning. That Lion? Was that the Lion season? Or
No. It was the one where they were on the island.
Oh, yes. That's my favorite one, too.
What is it called? There's like 13 of these things. I can't remember all of them at the moment. Let me see. I'm going to look it up really quick.
Have you
Dead Morning, Dead Sky Morning, sorry, Experiment in Terror number 3. It is actually one of my all-time favorite books, and I think it could totally stand alone and be a great movie. I love that book so much.
Yes. Have you read her Devil's Reprise yet? Her rock horror one?
No, it's on my list of things to read.
It's really good.
Yeah, I'm probably going to start that after Experiment of Terror because I'm still in denial that it's ending. So anyways, just to wrap it up, I really liked Donners of the Dead. I thought it was a great book. I highly recommend it. It was 4 stars. My review was 4 stars. The only reason I gave it 4 stars is because this is one of those things where it's like more like a 4.5 for me because, like I said, the sexy times were a little bit like I was like a little conflicted about it, but I do think it works in the book. So, and if you want to skip it, you can. I mean, you don't have to read the details, right? So,
I gave it 5 stars.
Yeah, because you like the sexy times more than me.
Yes.
So 5 stars from you and 4.5 for me. So it's like a 4.75. Donners of the Dead. It's really, you need to check it out. Karina Hale. You can find it on Amazon and probably just about every online store. You should probably just check her out, period. She's one of my and Lori's favorites. And we hope, fingers crossed, to maybe have her on the show at some point.
Yes.
So we are very close to the end of episode 2. Our podcast is going pretty well at this point. We haven't had any major malfunctions, thank God. My cable was out yesterday, so I was paranoid. But just to let you know, we are trying to put together a book of the month. And right now, we ended up only with 2 options, so I'm not sure if we're going to hold off and wait to see if we add more options, but right now, it's Rise Again by Ben Tripp and Dracula, so we're going to probably pick somewhere in mid-May and then go a little bit into June, just to give everyone a chance to join the Facebook page and vote and then pick up the book. And the idea is that Lori and I will read the book with you guys, and then we can discuss it on the podcast and then discuss it on the Facebook page, which I think will be fun.
I haven't read Dracula yet and I'm so scared because isn't it long?
It is, but it's wonderful. But I grew up reading classical literature, so it doesn't really put me off, but I do know a lot of people who get intimidated by the language. It's very Victorian.
I won't be intimidated by that. It's just, I look at page length now when I accept review requests because I'm like, I don't have time to read a 200,000 word novel right now.
I don't really know how long it is because I've read it multiple times. So I don't know. To me, I remember the first time I read it, it seemed really long. And the second, third, fourth, fifth time I've read it, because I don't know how many times I've read it, it seemed really fast, but maybe because I already knew the story.
I don't know. But you guys, maybe they should pick it so I have an actual excuse to read it.
Yeah, right?
Sometimes I need excuses to read something, you know?
You know, and it's really, I think one of the things is like, as a writer, everyone's always like, well, what are your book recommendations? And I kind of point to you and other bloggers because that's one of the things that's really hard for me as a writer is to read because I'm writing so much. So I think, you know, this is a great excuse for me to read something too. I do read, but I don't get to read as much as sometimes I want to. So it's a great excuse. So join our Facebook page and vote or add another suggestion if you want. And probably not next podcast, or probably in episode 4, we will announce what book we are reading. So this is the end of our podcast. Thank you for joining us. And thanks to Timothy Long for coming on and talking to us and entertaining all of us. I'm sure you were very entertained by it. And next episode, we're very excited. Emily Goodwin, the author behind the Contagium series, a really cool zombie series that's coming out from Permuted Press. And I think she'll probably let us know what the release dates are, because I'm not really certain yet. And she'll probably fill us in on some of her other stuff that she's written. So, you know, please check out the authors that are on the podcast and support them. You know, readers buying books, reviewing books, and telling other people about books is what keeps writers writing and readers reading, I mean, quite honestly. So, Lori, anything you want to add before we close out?
Nope. Thanks for joining us. Stock our authors. If you're, oh, and for the book of the month, if you are an author, you can suggest your own book.
Yeah, you can. We are totally cool with that. That is not a problem. You don't have to send in minions to do it. Do it yourself. Yeah. And then we can have you on the show. See, it all works out. All right. So thank you so much for joining us in episode 2. We'll see you in episode 3. Bye.
Bye.
This has been the Beautiful Nightmares and Wicked Dreams podcast. Find us on Facebook, and don't forget to subscribe on iTunes. Visit our website at bnwdpodcast.com or email us at wickeddreamspodcast@gmail.com. Thank you for listening.